Good morning, everyone.
Morning.
It is good to be home. I've been on vacation with the children, and we had a blast. We got to ride go-karts. We went to Florida, and we went past the Miami Heat Stadium, our arena, and saw their big national championship banners. We took pictures of that. We saw a Bugatti. Bugatti is a car, very expensive car. They are listed about $1.7 million. The one we saw was gold. I mean, it looked just like a gold necklace, a chain. It was nice. These cars, $1.7 million, I think they go up to 230 miles an hour. Gavin knew what it was. I knew what it was. My dad, my brother, and Sierra was like, it's a car. So we ran out and we're taking pictures, and we asked the guy who got out, who was standing around, who got out of that? And some big-time rapper was in the car, and he got on a bus and went somewhere else. So we stood around taking pictures. We saw Lamborghinis. I was in car heaven. I was pretty happy. But the thing that kind of dominated that activity as we were going from place to place was we were listening to the radio. We were in Florida. It was all about the Zimmerman-Martin trial. So we were a little bit concerned. I was concerned anyway because we were wanting to leave Saturday. And we figured if they make a determination Friday and things start going haywire, it might be a long trip home. But they didn't do that. They made the decision on Saturday. I think we were probably in Georgia. And we heard about it. I was asking my brother. He's all connected with his phone. And I said, hey, are people rioting? Are things happening? Are things being stirred up? He said, nope, everything seems pretty calm. So that's kind of what I want to talk about today, is not maybe so much the verdict, but what happens after the verdict? How do we get along? What do we do now? So that was the week before last. So last week when I got back to Bloomington, I had an occasion to be with my lawyer, my attorney for things I've got going on. And as we sat in the little room together, she said, Al, I want to ask you a question. What do you think about the Zimmerman case? And I gave her my think-sos. She said, I figured you would probably say something to that order. So I went home and went Friday. I was messing around doing some stuff, and I came back to my house, and I passed my neighbor John. Me and John are pretty good friends. I drove up to my driveway, and John backs his car out. He drives up to the cul-de-sac, and he comes out, and he rolls his window down and says, Al, how's it going? Where you been? I've been on vacation. Good. I've been dying to ask you a question, Al. What do you think about the case? So I gave John my think-sos and whatever's on what I thought. And I'm not really here to tell you my think-sos or whatever's about the case. I'm hoping that what I will do is to try to help us get through what happened after that. And what was the song we just sang? What was the song number? 828. And I don't know, but I guess me and Art must be on the same wavelength. I looked at that song and read those words. I'm like, wow, this is perfect. That song hit just exactly what I want to talk about right now, is us getting along, us getting past all this. I think there's a lot of things being stirred up with racism and, you know, this and that. And this guy had this in his mind. And just a lot of that that's going on right now. So that's what I want to talk about today. So before I get into that, I'm going to try to prove a couple of things, maybe. First thing, why do I qualify to talk about this situation? Well, number one, because I am human. I'm human. Now, with me being human, I've had experiences. All of us have had experiences. Not everybody's experiences are the same. Now, my dad, when he was 20 years old, and that's pretty young, he was blessed with me. And my mom was 18, very young. So my dad had me when he was 20. I didn't leave the house until I was 24. So when I left, he was a father for 24 years, but before that, he was a single guy for 20. even at that, my experiences and his are different. My brother and I lived in that house together. When I got married, we were 22 years together. My brother and I don't have the same experiences. Things that have bothered him in the past weren't even an issue for me. Things that were issues for him didn't bother me. So all of us have different, various experiences. Even people in your household, your brothers and sisters, everybody has different experiences. So I think that qualifies me to talk about this. I don't believe anybody's experiences are more valid or more important than anyone else's. We all have had experiences, and those things shape our lives and our attitudes. Our experiences should hopefully help us to move forward and not backwards. And I believe if you talk about negative experiences, and some people talk about them being discriminated against because of this and that, I would have to say that no matter what you are, no matter what you look like, no matter what your skills and ability, you will be discriminated against for whatever. Shaquille O'Neal is how tall? 7'1". How many jokes has he probably heard about, hey, what's the weather like up there? And hope you don't knock yourself in the head on that board. That's not being very nice, is it? If you have one arm, somebody's going to talk about you. If you're heavy, somebody's going to talk about you. If you're gray hair, blonde hair, black hair, if you wear glasses, no matter what you have, what your experience is, no matter what you have physically within you, you can be discriminated against. So to me, that levels the playing ground. All of our experiences go into making up what we are and how we deal with things. If you're too short, if you've got a club foot, I mean, anything can make us a person that can be discriminated against. So that's number one. Number two, I have no agenda in discussing this issue. I'm not trying to make you be my friend. I'm not trying to get you to like me or love me. You know why? Because I don't have to. With all of you here, we're all family. We've been family for a long time. So for me to bring this up is not for me to get you to like me or to take my opinions or whatever. It's nothing of that. I don't have an opinion. I'm not trying to get anything started. I'm hoping maybe I can get maybe things stopped. I don't think there's any issue here. But, you know, as I've listened to these things, this is on my mind. I'm not trying to get any money from anybody. I'm not trying to stir anybody up. I'm not trying to get anything going. And then a lot of what I've seen are views that are just extreme one way and views that are extreme the other way. I've seen Facebook posts of pictures that I think are just outrageous and unnecessary. Comments on Facebook and people tweeting and all this just is not necessary, just inciting things. So that's reason number two why I'm qualified to talk about this. And reason number three, I am trying to live for God. And I realize my writing is atrocious, but hopefully you can still kind of read that. I'm trying to live for God. So with those three things that I say qualify me to make comments on this, guess what? That qualifies everybody in here to say something. I think I've seen that as an issue. Some people in other groups will just shut them down. He can't say nothing about that. He don't know nothing. He ain't been through what I've been through. We can't say that. Everybody has experiences. Everybody has a voice. Everybody can comment and do the right thing, say the right thing. So what I'm hopefully going to do is show us and myself that what we need to focus on is not so much what has happened and how we get along, who came from where, but what does God have to say about, not about the verdict, but about how we treat each other. To me, that's the key. How do we treat each other now that we're in past this verdict? So everybody in this room is qualified to talk about this. So first of all, what about races? Where did that come from? I think God had something to do with that. Let's look in Genesis chapter 11, which Zach read to us just now. We looked at the first six verses. Mankind was on the earth. Mankind thought they were going to build this tower in a city, that they were going to climb up to heaven and see God. And that's what Zach read for us. But let's go ahead and read some more of what actually happened once they started this. In verse 7, it says, God is talking. It said, let us go down and confound their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad from thence upon the face of all the earth, and they left off to build the city. Therefore, the name of it is called Babel, because the Lord did confound their language in all the earth, and from thence did the Lord scatter them abroad upon the face of all the earth. So with that, to me, when he made these languages and they scattered, to me, that kind of created different races, different cultures. So that's what God did. And once they scattered and still had these different languages, he didn't come back 500 years, 50 years, or 12 years later and said, okay, vroom, which is a back to one. He kept it that way. The languages stayed different. So to me, that shows that maybe he wanted it to be that way. Now, as I thought about this, as far as languages, I kind of equate languages and race, ethnicities, backgrounds, cultures. They're kind of all intermingled to me. So we have English, we have Chinese, Japanese, Spanish, Samoan, German, French, Italian, Vietnamese. So I was trying to write as many of these things out as I could, and I didn't get very far. So I decided to look up how many languages are there on the earth? And I'm going to read this. This is something I just got out of, I'm not even sure what the website was. But it says, the most extensive catalog of the world's languages, generally taken to be as authoritative as any, is that of Ethnologue. I knew I was going to have trouble saying that. And this is kind of a group. And it's published by SIL International. And SIL is a Summer Institute of Linguistics. And I was looking for just the number of languages, but this kind of helped out. So it says they detailed and classified a list as of 2009 and included 6,909 distinct languages. And this is a U.S.-based worldwide Christian nonprofit organization whose main purpose is to study the development, document languages, especially those that are lesser known, in order to expand linguistic knowledge, promote literacy, translate the Christian Bible into all local languages, and aid minority language development. Languages are not all uniformly distributed around the world, just as in some places are more diverse than others in terms of plant and animal species. The same goes for the distribution of languages. Out of these 6,909 languages, for instance, only 230 are spoken in Europe, while 2,197 are spoken in Asia. So if you kind of equate a language to a culture, to a race, or to a people, there's lots of different cultures, lots of different races, lots of different people, lots of different things that kind of make this world go round. And if you want to look at, just talking about race, I am a black person. And if you drop me off, let's say you blindfolded me, put me in a car, bus, or a plane, flew me around, whatever and however, and landed, stopped, and walked me out, put a chair on the ground, and told me to sit there and say, okay, when this alarm clock goes off, Al, you can unblindfold yourself and see how well you survive. So I do that. The alarm clock goes off. The bell goes off. Unblindfold myself. And if you did that in the 50 United States, me being Army and slept outside and have done all these things, I think I could probably pretty much survive. If you don't drop me in North Dakota in a T-shirt and shorts in January, give me something to help survive, I think I could do it. And hopefully they would drop me off in Hawaii. So if you dropped me off and didn't tell me anything about where I was going even when I got there, just said, hey, you just need to survive, I would say within a few hours I could figure out at least what state I am. And how would I do that? If I saw some cars go past and whoops, Utah, another one from Utah, I must be in Utah. And I can go to a store and I can knock on, you know, hey, I need some help. Can you show me how to get this or that? Somebody in Utah could probably say, do whatever. This is where you can get some help or whatever. If I was dropped off in the Bronx, same deal. It'll be a little bit rougher than Utah, but I think I could probably survive. Somebody would eventually be able to help me find out, figure out, and do some things. You know, if you drop me off in the swamp, yeah, that'd be a whole different situation. I'd probably struggle more. But I think I could probably survive, and I could find somebody to help me out. Now, same scenario, except you're going to drop me in South Africa. When I get there, what happens to me? Hey, can you help me? And the guy goes, you don't know what I'm saying. He doesn't understand my language. We can't communicate. I'm going to have a real struggle surviving. So what would be my first thing to do? I'm looking for some missionary group from the United States, probably some Mormon group or something, to help me out. And you know the thing that they'll probably be when I find them? They'll probably be white people. I don't think there'll be a lot of black people there in a missionary situation from the United States. I'm going to look different than that. Really, I would probably look for some missionaries, and they'll probably be white. So our color, the race, I mean, that really cannot, you can't say all black people feel this because we don't. I mean, it's like night and day in some cases. Morgan Freeman, he's a pretty popular actor. He says, I'm not African American because I've never been to Africa. I thought, he probably has a point. I've never been there. I've got an aunt that's planning on going pretty soon. I think I'd like to go. But just to say the color of your skin makes you alike and able to do communicate and live, and it's not a true statement. So even at that, we are combining things and taking things apart, which really doesn't make sense. So that's, to me, is why some of the arguments I've heard are just so unnecessary. They're just nonsense. And I think a lot of people, like I said, I think, number two, a lot of people you hear on the radio and see on the TV, they have an agenda. They want to get something stirred up, get somebody mad, and if there was, and I'm glad this didn't happen, but if there were some big riots, some of the people would have, knew that was going to happen. So a lot of this is just nonsense. So again, my goal today is to talk to us and to myself about where do we go from here? How do we treat each other? And I think that's the key to it. It doesn't matter what the verdict is and all that. How do we treat each other from here on out? Again, I had a conversation with a professor from IU yesterday, and she was upset. She's ready to protest, and I think yesterday was a big protest day. In Indy, there were some things going on, all the major cities, a lot of big protests. And even when she started talking about her experiences, I'm from Mississippi, and there's always something, and I'm profiled, and she was just a little bit angry. And I said, I didn't say this, because she's a professor. She would have debated me into the ground. But, yeah, that's her experience, but that she can't let that carry over into how she treats, how I treat, how we treat each other. I've had some bad experiences, not necessarily racial, just bad experiences. And for me to drag that up and keep it going and always be the focus and the point of my anger doesn't get me or anybody that I deal with any further along. So I'm hoping that made sense. So the question is, so we've already established that God had something to do with our racial makeup and our scattering about. And that scattering, to me, created different cultures. Because when there were scattering, those that moved to Iceland have a different cultural experience than those that lived in South Africa, than those that live in Australia, than those that live in China. You know, if you're living in Iceland, you don't really have to deal with tigers and lions like you would have to do in Africa or the grizzly bears in the United States. I mean, every place has different things that cause cultures to have to live and react and do things differently. So the question is there division and confusion among races today? The answer is a resounding yes. But remember, in our Old Testament studies, there was confusion, aggravation, problems within families. Remember Esau and Jacob? Remember Joseph and his 11 brothers? Remember how the Benjaminites were almost totally annihilated as they were conquering the Promised Land? So there's problems in families. So there's going to be problems between different groups. And it's not even necessarily racial things. It's just groups. If you look in the Middle East, they're all the same people. But they get mad and fight about, let's draw a line in the sand. This is ours and this is yours. And every time they do that, and I think Trudy, she's kind of been a part of that because her son-in-law is from that area. And the last time they had a big thing going on, he went back to be with his family. And they build apartments and they redraw the line and the other side comes and bulldozes the apartments down and they redraw the line again and, well, we got this land back, we built some more apartments and the line goes back and they bulldoze, you know, just goes back and forth, back and forth. And if I went over there to look at those people, I couldn't tell you who's on what side because they dress alike, they speak the same languages, but they're mad at each other. So is there a divide? Yes. And again, even when we talk about cultures and what's important to different cultures, if you go to Afghanistan and offer the chief of the village $1 million, you look at that money and say, man, get out of my face, in whatever language. But if you say, hey, I have 50 goats, hey, bring the goats on. Because, and I'm not trying to be funny, that's just their culture. Goats mean something to them. Just like in Saudi Arabia, camels mean something to them, more so than what it means to us. The time I was in Saudi Arabia, I was going from Dahran to Riyadh, and the highway was like I-65, except there were no potholes. And it was nice, smooth, wide, and there was brown sand as far as you could see in every direction. And as we were driving, there was a guy, and I always call him Habib. I don't know what his name was. This guy had like 40 camels. And he had the stick, and he's, wow, ha, ha. And he was trying to get the camels across. And you know what happened to the traffic? Traffic stopped. And we sat there and waited until all those camels went across the road. And when they were across, we continued on. That Farmer Jones tried to do that on I-70 with his cows. I just need these cows to go across. People will be calling the cops, 911. We got a problem. Farmer Jones has lost his mind. Different cultures. Things are different. But we still have to get along. So we've established God has made these cultures. There is division and confusion among cultures. So the next question is God the author of confusion? The answer to that is no. And let's look in 1 Corinthians chapter 14. And in verse 33 it says, for God is not the author of confusion, but of peace, as in all churches of the saints. Now, I believe he's specifically speaking about an issue that they were having there that we've talked about in class here lately. But if you just take that by itself, why, if God is not the author of confusion in this situation, why would he be the author of confusion in any situation? He's not. He's a God of order. He's a God of logic. He's a God of things that make sense. So God is not the author of confusion. So should there be confusion with us, within all mankind on this earth, should there be confusion? I'll say the answer is no, there should not be. We should be able to live without war, without fighting, without all these things that we deal with. But that's not in God. That's not in man's nature. We don't seem to have that. So we need to rely upon God and trust in him and let him direct our lives. And if we do that, if all races were to do that, we would not have as many issues as we do. So what the question now is, what does God think about races? And not necessarily races, but just differences in people. Regardless if it's a racial thing, if it's a cultural thing, if it's me mad at my brother thing, what does God have to say about that? Let's look in 2 Chronicles. And you thought maybe I was going to go to the New Testament, but no. God made comments about this way long time ago. 2 Chronicles chapter 19. And we'll start at verse 1. It says, and Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, returned to his house in peace to Jerusalem. And Jehu, the son of Hananiah, the seer, went out to meet him and said to the king Jehoshaphat, shouldest thou help the ungodly and love them that hate the Lord? Therefore is wrath upon thee from before the Lord. Nevertheless, there are good things found in thee, that thou hast taken away the groves out of the land, and hast prepared thine heart to seek God. And Jehoshaphat dwelt at Jerusalem, and when he went out again through the people from Beersheba to Mount Ephraim, and brought them back unto the Lord God of their fathers. And he set judges in the land throughout all the fenced cities of Judah, city by city, and said to the judges, take heed what ye do, for ye judge not for man, but for the Lord, who is with you in the judgment. Wherefore now let the fear of the Lord be upon you. Take heed and do it, for there is no iniquity with the Lord our God, nor respect of persons, nor taking of gifts. So God was no respecter of persons way back in the Old Testament. Again, that's them trying to be have judges over the different land and the provinces. He says, don't be a respecter, like God is no respecter of persons. Let's look in Deuteronomy chapter 10. Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy chapter 10. And beginning at verse 17. It says, the Lord your God is God of gods and Lord of lords, a great God, a mighty and terrible, and with regardeth not persons, nor taketh reward. So let me read that again. For the Lord your God is God of God and Lord of lords, a great God, a mighty and terrible, which regardeth not persons, nor taketh reward. He doth execute judgment of the fatherless and widow, and loveth the stranger and giving him food. Love ye therefore the stranger, for ye were strangers in the land of Egypt. For thou shalt fear the Lord thy God, thou shalt serve him, and thou shalt cleave and swear by his name. He is thy praise, he is thy God, that hath done for thee these great and terrible things which thine eyes have seen. Thy fathers went into Egypt, and 70 persons. Now the Lord thy God hath made thee as the stars of heaven for multitude. So what is the big thing he said in there? Therefore, in verse 19, love ye therefore the stranger, for ye were strangers in the land of Egypt. So he even told the Israelites, love the strangers. Love those that are different cultures. And then in the other times he told them not to intermarry. That was because those people would take them away from him. But he did say, love the stranger. In other words, be kind to those that are strange to you. Let's look in Job chapter 34. Job chapter 34. I'm in Psalms. That's not the one I want to read. Job 34, beginning at verse 10. It says, therefore hearken to me, ye men of understanding. Be it far from God that he should do wickedness, and from the Almighty that he should commit iniquity. For the work of man shall he render unto him, and cause every man to find according to his ways. Yea, surely the Lord will not do wickedly, neither will the Almighty pervert judgment. Who hath given him a charge over the earth, or who hath disposed the whole world? If he set his heart upon man, if he gathereth unto himself his spirit and his breath, all flesh shall perish together, and man shall return again to dust. Now if thou hast understanding, hear this, hearken to the voice of my words. Shall even he that hateth right govern, and wilt thou be condemn him that is most just? Is it fit to a king thou art wicked, and princes you are ungodly? How much less to him that accepteth not the persons of princes, nor regardeth the rich more than the poor, for they are all the work of his hands. So I read all that just to say that God is not even concerned about how much money, who's rich, who's poor. We are all the work of his hands. So it doesn't matter what your financial status is. We are all the work of his hand. Let's look in Ephesians chapter 6. Ephesians chapter 6. And look at verses 8 and 9. It says, knowing whatsoever good thing any man doth, the same shall he receive of the Lord, whether he be bond or free. And ye masters, do the same thing unto them, forbearing, threatening. No master also is in heaven, neither is there respecter of persons with him. So again, it doesn't matter if you're a slave, if you're a master, if you have a job that's crummy, you have a raggedy boss that's mean and evil. God is no respecter of persons. Each one of us should execute our duties in a way that, in a godly manner, because God is no respecter of person, no matter what our status is. Let's look in Colossians chapter 3. Colossians chapter 3. And look at verses 22 through 25. To servants, obey in all things your master according to flesh, not with eye service as men pleasers, but in singleness of heart, fearing God. And whatsoever ye do, do it heartily as unto the Lord, and not unto men, knowing that of the Lord ye shall receive the reward of the inheritance, for ye serve the Lord Christ. But he that doeth wrong shall receive for the wrong which he hath done, and there is no respecter of persons. So that kind of goes back to what happened a couple weeks ago. Everybody's concerned about somebody didn't get what they should have got, and this shouldn't have happened. God is going to reward everyone for their deeds in the end. So we can't get bogged down into those situations and in those discussions. We can't get our hearts hardened and our minds and attitudes just to where, you know, kind of the conversation I was a part of yesterday. You know, he was racist and he had this all planned out and this. We don't know that. And if he did and if he got off, God is going to fix that in the end. And there's something else that no one else has ever said that I've heard in the public with Mr. Martin. If he were at home with his dad watching TV, playing PlayStation or whatever, this wouldn't have come about. I don't think I've heard anybody of any earthly wisdom or importance ever say that. And I've had a discussion with my son, with Gavin. I said, you know, this hoodie thing, if the pulling the hoodie off is going to save your life, take the hoodie off. And I think that's a big thing I see, is everybody's pushing this. Everybody has a right to win. And to me, when you rob a bank, what do? Most guys put the hoodie on or a mask or something so you can't see their face. I've told Gavin not, you know, just take it off. If it's going to help you get out of a situation, take it off. The professor I was talking to yesterday, we're just telling our young black men they can't do this and can't do that, and it's servitude. And a couple of us were, well, you know, I'd rather tell my son to be a little servant for just 10 minutes to save his life as opposed to him invoking his rights and being hardcore and getting blown away. To me, the argument doesn't make sense. If you can do whatever to de-escalate a situation, do it. Save your life, live another day. And I'd be more than happy for any of you guys, when you see Gavin, tell him the same thing. Take the hoodie off. Let's see. Let's look in Acts chapter 10. I'm just about done. Acts chapter 10. Even as Peter is about to preach to the Gentiles, he makes a statement. It says, Peter opened his mouth and said, of a truth I perceive that God is no respecter of persons. Even as he's going about preaching, he's giving this to the Gentiles for the first time. God is no respecter of persons. Let's look in Romans chapter 10. Romans chapter 10, verses 11 and 12. Says, for the scripture saith, whosoever believeth on him shall not be ashamed, for there is no difference between the Jew and the Greek, for the same Lord over all is rich unto all that call upon him. And if we look in Romans chapter 2, verse 11, that also says, just a quick statement, for there is no respecter of persons with God. So the next question I have is, so does the Bible teach us that we just have to ignore race and we acknowledge, and I don't believe that's what it's saying. I mean, it's good to acknowledge that you came from, you know, you're Irish descent, you're from whatever background. There's not a problem with that. The problem is how we treat each other, how we prejudge. And I'll be honest, I have some preconceived ideas myself because of my experience. Like I told you, I went to Saudi Arabia. We did the 9/11 thing, and I was on vacation in St. Louis with the kids. We went up in the arch, and I'm a little bit nervous about being in the big, tall buildings. So we get up in the arch, and I'm kind of look out the window. Ooh, that's cool. I'm ready to go. And I turn around, and there was a family. I'm not sure where they were from. The lady had on the long robe, and all you could see was her eyes. And my first thought was, uh-oh. I need to get out of here. So what did I do? I was being prejudiced, right? I had prejudged and made an assumption about this person, which was wrong on my part. Now, how do I handle that? Do I go say something to her? Or do I say, hey, you guys need to frisk her? No, I don't have to do any of that. I just need to keep that in my heart, in myself, deal with that because that's my issue to deal with. And if she would have asked me a question, I need to just talk to her like I talk to you. That's how you deal with it. All of us have some prejudice, some preformed, preconceived idea about something, somebody, someone. And it's generational. My thing is with the Middle Eastern. If you talk to people that were in World War II, oh, don't talk to me about those Japanese people. If you talk to somebody been in the Korean War, oh, Koreans don't. And again, that's wrong. But some of this is generational, and that's things that we just have to deal with on an individual basis. So that's the whole point, is that as we are in these conversations and people ask you what you think and what, are you free? I'm not, and I'm saying you can have a free to have an opinion right now. If somebody stood up and said, I think Mr. Zimmerman was right on and he was justified in what he did and the verdict was correct, all I can say to you is, well, I think just as basic as, you know, one guy's arm and another isn't, there should have been something that happened. It'd be the end of the conversation. We're done. As far as us in here, we should be able to push through and love each other despite all these things that go on outside these doors. So the thing we need to do is love each other, and as we go out, try to love others that we work with, we go to school with, we shop with, that we live next door to. And I think that's what God would have us to do. So that is pretty much the lesson for this morning. And I really think, Art, I mean, we didn't talk about it. That was just, the song was right on time. And I would say if we looked at that song, and that's the first time I've ever sang that song, never really looked at it. But if you look at the words of this song, right on time. This is what we need to do and how we need to live our lives, is to get along, help those that are suffering, and just get along. Try to help as many people as we can get to heaven, get to Christ. So if there are those that are subject to the invitation this morning that we need to be baptized and become a member of the Lord's body, we have that opportunity to do that. If you come forward and let your wishes be known, we can get you to water. We can get you baptized. If there are others that have other issues and need prayers or support or just to let something off your chest this morning, you have that opportunity as well as we together stand and sing the song of invitation.